we get things underway by welcoming back to the program not just one of our favorite singer-songwriters, but one of the best in the business, the very talented Jill Sobule, who is coming our way back to New England for shows Saturday in Greenwich, Rhode Island, and Sunday at One Longfellow Square in Portland. Jill, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I like your theme song music.
Well, we're so happy to have you back with us. We love your music. So excited that you're going to be back here in Maine. What's it like to be back out there doing live shows again?
Well, you know, at first I was kind of wonderful just to do Zoom shows. I kind of enjoyed my first year of COVID just because, you know, you just change your top, be in your sweats, and, you know, didn't have to travel. And I thought, this is the life. But there's nothing that lost its appeal quickly. And there's nothing like playing shows. Whenever I think like I'm moving on to other stuff, I just realize how wonderful and beautiful it is to connect with people in real life.
Are there elements, though, of what you did during the pandemic? Are there things that worked during that time that you'll incorporate into your career going forward?
Well, I was doing house concerts on Zoom, which I loved. And I love when you're seeing people, what their artwork is on their wall, their pets, they're always eating something. So there was that kind of voyeuristic pleasure I had on that. And also I did songwriting classes. Mm. And that was, I had the best time and I had the best students and they did some amazing songs. They weren't your normal songwriting lessons or classes. We would have like, okay, you guys, we are going to write the musical, The Godfather, part one, part two, not three. And people were into it. We had fun. So those are the kind of things I want to hold on to.
Well, let me ask you about songwriting as you brought that up. Are you, and we've talked to so many songwriters who are constantly writing things down on scraps of paper, or in these days, a title or a phrase will pop into their heads. Do you do that? Are you putting it on a phone or somewhere so you can come back to it later? Or do you remember those ideas?
I used to. You know, I should, but I'm too much of a slacker. I hate those people that were, you know, oh, yeah, I wrote every day during COVID. It's like, F you, you know? That made me feel bad about myself. No, I have. Well, what's interesting is I've been working on musicals the last couple of years, and so you have deadlines. And so that's what's even great. And but it's easy because you have a storyline to write to. So almost like, you know what I loved? It's not quite that, but it's been attributed to so many people like Sammy Kahn. In the old days, they asked him, what came first, the music or the lyrics? And he goes, the paycheck, you know? I'm not like that because I love writing, but I love having a story to write to. So that was a long-winded answer.
Not at all.
You mentioned the musical work you've been doing. One of the ones you've been doing is F Seventh Grade, which you during COVID got together, got it filmed, and it was a finalist for the Lambda Drama Award last year, right?
Yeah, we only did three nights online at a makeshift drive-in, and it was really cool. But again, I was playing in front of cars, and they were there was no even a PA. They were listening in their cars, the drive-in style, and it felt like a bad Stephen King novel, you know? These faceless, evil cars, you know, that they would honk if they liked something. But there was, you know, the real thing was canceled, but I'm doing it this fall in New York at a really wonderful small theater in the East Village. So you guys are going to have to come down.
Yes, would love
definitely.
To. And it's not even one of the good Stephen King movies. That, you know, Maximum Overdrive, the animated cars, was notoriously the bad one.
It was or wait, wasn't there that Steven Spielberg TV movie where it was the truck that was after the guy that
Oh, yes.
the faceless truck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned house concerts and doing the virtual ones, but you also do those when you're on the road, sort of in between the club gigs. What's sort of the, for you, what's the different, the biggest difference between, you know, doing a club or a theater gig and doing a house concert, you know, in someone's home or backyard or whatever?
Well, I love both. There's something really funny about playing and very intimate. It's very intimate. I've had house concerts where there've been four people in. That was kind of weird too, but it still was good to, 200 people they have or 300 people they have in their backyard and a big PA system. But I really like the ones where it's just I don't have to bring a PA. I just do it, and people bring their crock pots for potluck, so lots of interesting food out of crock pots. I really love them.
Well, a big part of all your shows, and not a lot of artists do this, is that either you play requests, you'll do songs for your fans at the shows. Is that something you've always done, or has that developed more in the more recent years?
To ask for requests?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, first of all, I never have a set list. So I'm just kind of winging it and seeing what feels right. And then I'll get a spot where it's like, I don't really know what to play next. What do you guys want to hear? And I also think people come to your show and I love, even if it's a song that I've sung 100 million times. I get it. If someone wants to hear it, it makes me proud. It makes me feel good.
We're talking with Jill Sobule here on Downtown. She'll be in Portland at One Longfellow Square on Sunday night. Jill, you were on the cutting edge of crowdfunding. Now everybody's doing it. Do you get a cut of that?
Well, here's the thing I wish is that. So I did my jillsnextrecord.com in 2009. And it was before there was Kickstarter or GoFundMe. And then I heard about these people that wanted me to get together with them. They were starting a thing called Kickstarter. And I'm like, why? I'm such a loser artist. Why didn't I think of a business?
Yeah,
But
the
yeah.
California Years was the album that came out of that, right?
Yeah, and it was an amazing experience to do that, because I thought, look at it, label's not gonna give me money to do the record the way I want to do it, and so I'm gonna ask my fans, but not just ask them out of charity. I'll give them something in return, So I had fun things from mine was polished rock to weapons grade plutonium, and weapons grade plutonium, someone gets to sing on my record. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was, I really love that album. I've been a huge fan of your work for a lot of years. One of the things that you do a lot of is what you have called soul songs. You know, songs like Billy's Thing, Joey, Claire, where you're telling sort of a person's story in the song. What catches your eye when you set out to do one of those songs?
Well, I think that's probably why doing musicals is good for me, is I like the stories, and I think I remembered songs that I loved as a kid. A lot of them were story songs, whether they, I mean, I always think of my older brother gave me this John Prine record, and I was like, I don't, folky country guy. But then I heard songs like Hello in There and Sam Stone, and it really affected me. It was very cinematic almost. And, so I think that I've carried that through, and someone's life interests me, whether that's from a tabloid like Joey or Billy's Thing, is it sometimes it's good to get away from your own life and someone else's, and somehow you connect to that and it ends up sometimes being about you, but it starts with someone else.
We had Yardley Smith of The Simpsons on the show a few months ago. You performed on an episode of The Simpsons. What was that experience like, and the aftermath of being on a show like that?
Well, you know, I knew Matt, the creator, for a long time. We'd go to this same kind of conference, and one time years ago, he said, "Jill, he's the best." By the way, he said, he's so un-Hollywood, you, Matt Groening. And he said, "Jill, I love your voice. We should do something with you." And so every year I'd see him, I'd go, "What? When am I going to be in The Simpsons? What's going on?" And it became this joke. And I never expected it. And then a couple years ago, I got, there's an episode called Lumber Jill. And he must have thought, that's when I can get Jill to sing a song about Lumber Jill. So, and it was, you know, a dream come true. I mean, singing on The Simpsons. Mm. Yeah, that I want that to be in my obit, like the number one.
So, we talk a lot about the story songs, and one of the early songs you did, Karen By Night, is still one that just your fans just adore. Who knew that such a long running song would come from a failed attempt at being a shoe salesperson? Selling shoes.
Yeah, you know, this great, and that song has become a favorite. That's requested every show, and yeah, you never know what song is gonna have legs or the connect to people that'll stay. So, yeah, and I love playing that song, so I don't mind that at all.
Last time you were on, it was on the very day of the release of Nostalgia Kills, and ever since then, Island of Lost Things has been in my personal hot rotation.
Yeah, thank you. That song is one of my personal favorites that I'm proud of. You know, when I think about I'm going to write a song, and I think about how did I write that song, or how did I write Jetpack, or ones that I'm super proud of, and I have no idea. It's I don't know how that happened, because writing can be so hard. I mean, and there's those moments where you've got that divine something or another. I don't know what it is, but thank you. That's one of my favorites.
And is the story true that the inspiration for the album was some, I think, critic claiming that nobody over 40 wrote decent music, memorable music?
Oh, yeah, he became my nemesis. Yeah, I overheard this guy at a party saying, yeah, he was a music publisher. Yeah, people over 40 can't really, you know, it's not relevant anymore, whatever they write. And I remember walking up to the guy, I didn't know him, and I go, I was just stunned, and I was so mad, and I said, you're stupid. And I walked away. I have no idea who that was. But I said, you're an idiot. And but he's been my nemesis ever since.
It's good to have a nemesis, I think, right? It inspires you.
I think it's great to have a nemesis, and one that really doesn't matter. And that they don't know they're your nemesis.
You also delve into politics with your songs fairly regularly, and in the past have used, it's very interesting because your songs will reach out to the other political side. I remember going to a show of yours with a friend of mine who is by far the most conservative person that in my circle of friends, and he just absolutely fell in love with your music and your shows. And you've used that music to sort of reach out and start discussions in the past. Do you think that sort of thing has become harder over the last few years, or
Well, yeah, one of the things I liked is because I like to understand or sometimes reach out to the other side, even if I do it in a, you know, satirical, mocking way, but I never want to be mean-spirited. But that the last couple of years has been, it's been when you have people like, you know, I mean, I was writing a song called Bring Back Richard Nixon. He seemed like a reasonable fellow, you know, compared to, you know. So when you've got your Marjorie Taylor Greens and your Mark Hollies, and so it's hard, even though I still want to do that. I love when I have trolls, you know, that are upset at my politics or music, and I still I try to be as sweet as I can and reach out to them, and once in a while it's really fun to and y'all get something out of it, or hopefully they'll get something out of it. So
can you kill them?
It's been harder.
Can you kill them with kindness? Does that work with those people? I say those people.
Well, those people. Well, there was one guy that I wrote a song because of it, and he called me Commie Dyke Jew, and I was like, and, you know, whatever. But I wrote a song, and he was just, you know, I wouldn't block him because I was amused, but I wrote him a song called it's Can I Cuss on This?
Minor cussing. We're
okay, minor. Well, it's just as easy to be nice as it is to be an A. Is that okay? Did I do okay?
Yes. Oh, yes. I have said just that.
So I sent him the demo of the song, and he wrote. I wrote back with four thumbs up. He goes, "That's a good song."
You have started a Patreon. You started one last year. Do you find that a great way to interact with your fans?
Yeah, I need to do more of that, and I think more people need to join my Patreon, because I will. I've sent them songs that have not demos and recordings that I don't know yet what I'm doing. So with them. So that's, I love that. I love talking to them. I love giving them advanced songs and also their opinion, because I'm due for a new record and I want to do it very soon. And I'm mixed on what I want to do. I have such eclectic taste. I mean, part of me wants to do like just a piano and voice, because I like my voice with piano and I don't play it, or like a little jazz trio, but not like I do the classics kind of, but that instrumentation. Then a part of me wants to do a really dumb rock record that sounds like Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Babies or something.
From the past, you were on an episode of Tremé. Any thought of maybe some New Orleans sound?
Oh man, that was, I played with Bonorama. There was like six trombone players. Now that was amazing.
We're both huge fans as well of Warren Zevon. Can you talk about your friendship and your work with him?
No. I loved him so much. I did his last two tours, and I remember my first day working with him, because I'd been warned that he cannot be nice. He might not be nice to the opening act. So I met him and I said I was grateful. I'm a big fan. And then I just left him alone. I'd stay in my green room. And then a few days later on tour, he knocked at the door. He goes, "What do I have, rabies or something?" and we became fast friends. And there was one tour when it was just, we had a big rock bus. And it was just me, the bus driver, Warren, and the road manager. And it was, he was, I can't even explain it. I'm getting verklempt. He was just so sweet to me. And we had such a nice thing. Yeah, and he was funny. He was a funny curmudgeon. And I got to the point, you know, like I said, at first he intimidated me, but then I got to the point where there would be this girl who was, you know, 16-year-old girl at the bus going, you know, my mom turned me on to Warren, and can I get his autograph? I'm his biggest fan. And I went back to the bus. I go, Warren, a girl wants your autograph. And he goes, nah, I don't want it. I go, she's 16. You get out there and you give her your that autograph. You do that. And he goes, okay.
Could you see yourself, Jill, doing another collaboration like you did with Julia Sweeney? That type of a combination of music and acting?
Oh my God. Well, I wish Julia would go out on the road. I saw her, we were at an event together when I was back in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. And I said, come on, can we do the Jill and Julia show again? And she goes, I do not want to talk about myself ever again. I'm done. And of course, she's got, you know, a successful TV show over the last few years. So, you know, I'm kind of pissed off that she's not making the hundreds of dollars on the road. yeah, that was amazing.
So you mentioned that seventh grade is going to be in New York in the fall. Do you have any other stage work that's coming up? Beyond that,
well, yeah, as a fact, right now in Philadelphia, the University of the Arts is doing a piece that I co-wrote. It's a adaptation of the Scarlet Letter. It's called Crimson Lit, and it's really cute and really fun. And we're doing that. They're doing a little production for their semester. And then I'm doing in Southern California, we're doing another reading with the theater that wants to put it on. And then, you guys, this summer, I don't know why I said yes to doing it, but I'm going to be a thespian.
Ooh, where?
I am in someone asked me, who was a fan, to if I would be in his musical, and it's going to be at the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles for June and July. That's a really fancy one, and I haven't done theater like that since fifth grade when I played Miss Hanukkah in my fifth grade play.
Well, people are still talking about that performance, I'm told.
Well, that's what I've joked with. I talked to the director and the writer, and I said, you do realize I've never done this, or I haven't done this since fifth grade, playing Miss Hanukkah. And they wrote back, yeah, we were both there. It was, we've never forgotten that show.
Well, Jill, it's wonderful to talk with you again. As far as we're concerned, you're a damn national treasure. We're so happy to have you with us, and so great to have you coming to Maine on Sunday.
Yeah, are any of you guys going to be at the show?
I will be at the show, yes.
Well, you can request whatever you want.
I'll try to narrow down my list before then.
Maybe you should just make me the set list. I don't care.
Jill, you're awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today, and good luck on the road and with everything you've got coming up.
My pleasure.
Thank you again. Jill Sobule with us on Downtown.